Hey, welcome to Athlete on Fire. This is Scott Jones, your host, and as usual, we are here to inspire people all over the world by sharing the stories of amazing athletes, adventurers, and today is no different. Although not a traditional athlete, he's an amazing photographer who works with athletes all the time. He films and documents surfing as a career. He's done some amazing stuff, both video and photography. You guys can go to his website. I share that during the show and kind of follow along the journeys that he takes in some of the coldest and most remote locales in the world. Very inspiring guy. You guys can really enjoy it. Before we go on a little bit, if you guys want to check out the site, if you've never been here before, athleteonfire.com shares insights and resources that have to do with mental toughness, physical toughness, training regimens and ideals, everything that you could really imagine that has to do with becoming an athlete and becoming an athlete on fire, which is the whole goal of sharing these stories and bridging the gap between amazing athletes and adventurers and you guys at home. I'm going to step back right now, let you guys enjoy the show. Please connect with us, connect with our guests. He gives you plenty of ways to do that. We love the feedback. Thanks so much for listening.
Prepare to be inspired by some of the most successful athletes on the planet. This is Athlete on Fire, your daily source of amazing stories that will ignite your pursuit of excellence and inspire you to be and do amazing things. Now, I have one question. Are you fired up?
Hey, welcome to Athlete on Fire. I am Scott Jones, your host. Thank you guys for joining us again today. I'm here with another photographer. We've had photographers on in the past, but this guy is doing some nutty, crazy, adventurous things. I'm not going to bore you guys with a long bio. We're going to dive right into it. This is Chris Burkhardt out of California. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, Scott. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man. And you know, just our first site, Athlete on Fire, of course, is the title of the show. It's the site that's behind all this stuff. A lot of people wouldn't consider photographers athletes, but the second that you go check out his site and see some of the stuff that he is doing, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you guys do want to follow along just a little bit today, you can go to burkhardphoto.com, burkardphoto.com, and you can dive into some of his images and really kind of get lost in his content, which is, it's very inspiring, it's very interesting. He's got a video on there called The Arctic Swell, which is just amazing, and it's about some of his time in the Arctic with some of these amazing surfers, and we'll dive into that stuff later in the show. Really quick, Chris, let me just explain to you how this works. You know, Athlete on Fire is meant to inspire people who aren't doing things that they want to do, who aren't doing these amazing things, to go out there and try on themselves. And we do that through a few segments. And the first segment is just me and you hanging out and getting to know each other, and it's called Athlete Defined. Then we go into Athlete on Fire, which is our second segment, which is more like the mental and the physical capacity it takes to do what you're doing. And then,
totally.
And then lastly is Athlete Inspired. And then we're just going to give people some good resources. All right?
Great.
All right, so let's get right into Athlete Defined, okay? So you're 15 years old. It's a Saturday. It's the middle of summer. What are you doing all day, and who are you doing it with?
Oh, man. I guess I'm looking back in time here, because, you know, 15 seems like a lifetime ago. Growing up, it was probably finding any excuse or any way to get down to the beach. That was pretty much my MO. When I was younger, growing up in a beach town, you know, it's always funny because I come across a lot of these amazing athletes I respect so much, and they always laugh because I've spent literally zero time in the mountains or in the snow specifically, because I've always been chasing surf. That's just been kind of my approach from day one. So
yeah. where were you?
Pismo Beach, California, which is where I live now. And I basically grew up surfing there, grew up kind of cutting my teeth on like the waves and the cold water in Central California. And that's sort of been kind of, I feel like, what's defined me as a photographer and athlete. So.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go back to your images throughout the show just because they're so cool. I mean, just the point of view and the perspective that you take with is really just amazing. And I don't know hardly anything about photography. But let's get your childhood a little bit. You know, what was your family life like? What kind of dynamic was there? Do you have any siblings? What kind of work ethic was instilled, if any? You know, just kind of take us back to that part of you.
Family life growing up was, you know, I was lucky enough to grow up in a really beautiful area. But that being said, you know, we never really had the means to travel much. So a lot of my experience growing up was really places that we could travel to, like in a day, you know, or Yellowstone, Yosemite, Joshua country, you know, just national parks around the Western U.S. And that was kind of always my experience. I was grew up with a really great appreciation for, you know, the desert and the mountains and a lot of these different places, but never really traveled internationally. And so that was always kind of my dream growing up, was having this finding a way to get out of the country. And that's kind of what I guess brought me to photography, was, you know, it became a vehicle to access those places. I definitely, you know, was from day one, my earliest experiences were always finding a way to get to the beach. So that's been a constant theme throughout, you know, my childhood as well as my life. And it's, you know, I guess, you know, somebody put it best to me. It's like, there's something to be said for being able to see a horizon. And I've always been one of those people, like, I need to see a horizon line, you know, and no matter where I live or no matter what, I just, something about, you know, being able to see the sun setting on the ocean is a kind of a way of life for people like myself.
Yeah, for sure. So did you live with both your parents?
Yep. Grew up with them, and I got three brothers, and they're all pretty studly. yeah, so it's a big family.
So
a big family, a lot of boys.
Was surfing a family deal, or was that your deal?
You know, it was kind of more like it was kind of more my deal, just because there's a you know, couple years separation between me and my brothers, and that was just something that I was always into and always wanted to be a part of. So that was kind of, I feel like, my thing, you know, and it was just something that I was always drawn to. And so, you know, I think too, just to answer your last question, I forgot my brothers are stepbrothers. I have two stepbrothers and a half brother, and my mom was remarried when I was growing up. So basically, like, originally, like, when it was just me and my mom for quite a few years, like, that was just our thing. We'd be at the beach all the time, and, like, you know, be out in the water on a boogie board, like, her pushing me off the boogie board and teaching me how to swim in the ocean. And so I have this, like, real, you know, connection to, like, this, the community that I live in and the place, because it's where I learned to surf and, like, where I learned to kind of just have fun. It was, like, always a matter of, like, we didn't go to parks, you know, we didn't go to, you know, places to have fun. We went to the beach, and that was it.
Yeah, that's cool. So can you share a story about your mom, like something that's kind of interesting or quirky, or, you know, something that you guys would always talk about if you grab the coffee and just kind of reminisce or laugh about?
You know, it's a funny one, because I feel like, so, you know, my mom was amazing. She's actually, like, my full-on hero, because she had me when she was 17 and just raised me through high school and just, you know, has been, like, a total inspiration to me from day one, and gave me such a huge respect for single moms and women that, you know, make that happen. But, you know, growing up, I was a total terror. Like, she used to, like, manage a health club and used to teach classes at a gym. And I would be the one, like, who'd, like, escape from, like, the daycare sort of thing and, like, run around and, like, slap people's butts while they're, like, running on, like, treadmills and stuff like that, and just, like, terrorize. And it was brutal growing up. And now that I have two kids, I just look back and I'm like, wow, like, I can't believe she put up with me. It's crazy.
Oh man, that's awesome. Yeah, you know, me and my wife are in the fitness industry. I can just imagine our boys going around slapping old ladies' butts during Pilates class or something like that. That'd be kind of interesting. All right, so surfing is such a romanticized sport, really. I mean, if you're not from the ocean,
it's so hot right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. Let's de-romanticize it a bit. Tell us a story when you're learning how to surf, and I know this had to happen for you because it happens in every sport, but where you felt like you wanted to show off, or you wanted to really, like, do something cool in front of someone and impress them, or just impress yourself, and it just didn't go well, you know?
I think that, you know, we grew up around a pier, right? Pismo Pier, and there's a couple of piers around where I live. And so it's always been that thing to, like, go jump off the pier, right? And there's been definitely a handful of times where, you know, you think you know what you're doing, and you're all excited, and you know, the waves are big, and that's usually when you jump off, right? Because the waves are big and you don't want to have to paddle out. And so for me, I remember a couple experiences where, like, one where I was, like, I jumped out, and, like, you know, usually you hold your board and you throw it, and then, like, I think for some reason, like, I landed really weird and, like, just totally, like, dented, put a huge ding, like, elbow into my surfboard. Which is a total bummer. And then there's been a multiple other times where I've, like, tried to do a backflip and landed, like, more on my back than on my legs. So that's always a bummer. And when the entire lineup is, like, sitting there watching you, that's it definitely like puts you right back in your place, you know?
I grew up in Florida, not on the surf side, on the golf side. But let's tell somebody, let's speak to the Midwest or into, countries that don't have good surf. What is the culture like? Do you go teach yourself how to surf off to the side until you get to a certain competence, or do you find buddies that'll teach you? I mean, is it a welcoming thing? Is it alpha dog all day long? How's that work?
It's interesting. I think that, like with anything, the ocean does its own, like it's different because you could take a, skiing and stuff. You could usually like, you could take a lift up to a double black diamond and try it, right? But you can't even get out sometimes to a wave that's like a double black diamond. You can't even get out in the lineup when the waves are intense and big. So the ocean has a way of shutting you down and like putting you in your place, pretty immediately. And so it's kind of a different experience where like you are forced to kind of work your way up from like riding like whitewash on the inside to like riding shore break to, all those other things. I think it's one of those things where, like with climbing, for example, there's like, some of the hardest climbs, like 514s, you can walk up to the thing and put your hands on it. It doesn't mean you're going to go anywhere. And like with surfing, it's sort of the same way. You're forced to work your way up.
No, that's a really cool way to put it. And for layperson, you might just think, okay, everybody has access to all the same waves. Everybody's gonna be able to try it, and it's just not like that. That's pretty cool. All right,
Yeah, I
so
mean, it's even like dropping in. You'll go out to pipeline. You might be able to get out to the lineup, but if you try and drop into the wave, it's going to be a total nightmare,
yeah, for sure. No, that's really cool, and that's good for me to know moving forward with the show too. So I have you on the show. We're getting to know you a little bit. Why do you think I would have you on a show called Athlete on Fire? I mean, let's tell people a little bit more about your background. What are you doing right now? What are some titles that you've held? What do you consider yourself besides a photographer,
I would say a father first and foremost because that's the role that I end up having to take on the most. It's funny though because I feel like in the last 5 to 10 years, you really do see a lot of these amazing athletes kind of turned photographers and vice versa. And I would never consider myself an athlete by any means. I would consider myself an extremely athletic person, but my athletic pursuits are more about just being able to be in shape enough to be in those moments. For me, it's all about, just being versatile. Yoga is a huge part of my life. Being a dad, being, a member of my family, being a son, whatever those roles mean. But I definitely, I feel like to be defined by any of them is kind of it's kind of hard to do because we end up taking on so many, we end up wearing so many hats throughout the day,
For sure.
And that's the key. So. It's a unique one, we're always kind of searching for a way to define ourselves, but I think that just for me, the way I like to look at it the most is like I aim to inspire people, and that's really whatever role that puts me in, great. If it's photography makes is the easiest thing to do, then awesome.
Awesome, man. We'll cover more about what you're working on, and I want to talk about the video that you've done. It's just amazing, and then we'll tell some stories about these athletes that you're working with because that's just as inspiring as anything to me. So we're going to move forward a little bit to the next segment, but before we do that,
Rad.
I always this is always the last part of getting to know you. I want you to share the most inspiring thing that you've ever seen in person that has to do with competition or sport or athletics or anything like that that you've actually witnessed.
Oh man, the most inspiring thing I've seen in competition. Well, it's always a hard one because that's one of the unique things about surfing is that I try to avoid the competitive side of it like the plague. So what ends up, the places that I go and the things that we seek out, it's so like little about the competitive side and so much more about kind of like that search and that distant shore, idea of just going somewhere like off the map and really more it's about free surfing, which you see that in skiing and other sports, but it's kind of different. Because we're not out there trying to ride the biggest wave or get the best score in a heat. So for me, I guess the most inspiring feats that I see are the guys that I travel with, going to these really freezing, frigid, cold places and putting on wetsuits that even though they're thick, they're still going to be freezing. And surfing in 40, 30 plus degree water, that to me is the most inspiring thing that I have a chance to witness anytime. That's what makes, I guess, my job, you know, feel fulfilled is when I get to document those experiences. Yeah. Anytime those guys, like, they score an amazing wave, or like they get an amazing wave in conditions like that, that's kind of it to me.
Oh, that's awesome. And, you know, I mean, with any endeavor, especially adventurous endeavor, the competition turns from trying to overcome other athletes to just overcoming your own fears, overcoming your surroundings. And that's where a lot of that inspiration comes from, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's move on to Athlete on Fire. We're going to dive into all this stuff a little bit more in depth here. First, before we get started, I always have my guests start with like a challenge, ideally a physical challenge, but it can be mental too. So if you want to take a second and give our listeners something that they can do to relate to what you're doing, or just to go challenge themselves.
Yeah, you know, for the last, like, I think, couple years, or the last, like, 2 years, really, you know, it's not like a physical challenge so much, but I definitely have tried to end every shower with a, you know, on the absolute coldest possible scenario that I can. And I think that in some small way prepares me for being in those freezing cold places. I'm a big fan of, like, Scandinavian, you know, Scandinavian culture, and a big part of their culture is to kind of do these, like, hot, cold treatments. You know, you'll see that in Japan, you'll see that in a lot of different places. Right. Yeah. And so for me, that's like such a huge part of being able to be prepared physically, mentally, emotionally for being in freezing places, especially when, you know, you're jumping in the water, you're doing stuff like that. Like, that is, to me, like, kind of everything, you know? And so I've taken upon myself to, it's also, like, really good for your circulation. It's good for your blood flow. It's good for a lot of things and for a lot of reasons, but, being able to kind of practice that daily, weekly, to the point where, like, you know, try going further beyond that. And then, you know, I laugh at these, like, ice bucket challenge things, because it's kind of a joke, you know, like when you jump into an ice lake in Iceland, or you're sitting in your wetsuit, you know, shivering for like an hour, like that's a real ice bucket challenge. In a way. So it is what it is, but there's, to me, that's definitely like one thing I would say, put on your list. If you want to, you know, shoot in the Arctic and you want to swim in freezing cold temperatures, then that is the best way to prepare for that.
Awesome. So there's the challenge. And we've actually had a guest that talks about cold shower therapy, and, you know, a lot of it's just mental. If you can't be uncomfortable for a few seconds, how are you going to do things that are going to help you grow? And I love the whole concept.
Yeah.
I've been doing it forever. I'm just kind of weird. I like cold water, and, growing up in Florida, yeah, I would always take cold showers just to cool down and stuff. But go try it, people. You got to try to either end or at least take a whole shower on the coldest that you can possibly get it. And Chris is calling all you ice bucket challengers out right now, sounds like.
If you want to get really crazy about it, just be a real man and fill up, like, a, you know, a tub outside or a bathtub with ice water, as cold as you can get it, you know, below 40 degrees, ideally. And then go from, like, a hot shower to a cold one and back and forth. That's the ultimate, you know, that'll really get the blood moving, and it'll make you feel amazing afterwards, no doubt about it. So
awesome. All right. So that's a great challenge. Okay. So give us a good mantra or a really inspirational quote that you like, or that you fall back on, or that just kind of moves you.
Oh my gosh, man. That's a tough one. I'm such a big fan of quotes. You know, there's so many, and we read a lot all the time. But man, I'm going to try and look one up right now. I'm going to try and look one up right now that I really love. Man, let me see. That's a tough one.
It is.
Because obviously I'm a huge fan of, like, John Muir and Emerson and Thoreau and a lot of these people that I'm constantly just inspired by, and the things that they write and say, it really moves me and kind of inspires me. But actually, I read an amazing quote from Ansel Adams today, actually. And I this is one of the things that I do constantly, is I'll save this stuff as it comes to me. And I read this one. It said, "When the world becomes unclear, I shall focus with photographs. When images become inadequate, I shall be content with silence." And I think that is, that's kind of you know, appropriate to the photographer. You know, you shoot photographs to kind of make sense of the world. And in a way, it's like a really private, you know, special practice. It kind of sums it up for me.
No, that's great. So let's dive into the mental and physical piece of what you do. I read that you're a self-taught photographer. Is that right?
Yep.
So
that's correct.
What's that process? I mean, it's an art, of course. I truly believe that. My sister's a professional photographer, and you can see process. You can see how people grow as artists and how their eye changes and all those cool things. What was the process for you? When did you decide, and how did you make it into something that's your passion and career now?
Wow, you know, it definitely is something that has, for me, been such a unique process of learning and growing and gathering information. It's a never ending cycle. For me, it started basically by wanting to, I loved art. I did a lot of art in high school, and I used to do, like, you know, painting and easel and you know, sketching and just then clay and all kinds of stuff. And so when I wanted a way to kind of move my art from being stuck on a hillside somewhere, I was like exploring, wow, like, how, you know, what else could I do? And when I found photography, I actually found it because my girlfriend at the time, now wife, her mom was a photographer, had an old camera, which I grabbed and used, and I loved it. And it was just this old film camera. It was great. So that was kind of everything. That was everything to me. I found this medium, you know, this creative outlet that I could take into the mountains and into, you know, social settings and kind of everywhere. And it was what really ended up defining me, you know, and defining my process for creativity, I think. And so that was kind of how it started, you know, just out of high school, was surfing a lot. I loved landscapes, and that's originally what I wanted to shoot. I wanted to shoot only landscapes. That's all I cared about, was being in nature and finding more excuses to be outside. And I realized, after kind of shadowing a landscape photographer for a couple of months, there's no money in that. It was going to be a total, you know, it wasn't going to work. So I just realized, okay, what else could I do? How could I bring my same aesthetic that I love for landscapes to something else? So I sought out shooting surfing, and I loved the locations that it could take us, and I loved the scenarios and the surroundings, and I felt like I wanted to celebrate those more than anything else. So
that's cool.
So yeah, I know it's long-winded, but I hope that makes sense.
No, you know, I'm sitting here just listening, as probably as all our listeners are. Of course, I have questions, but just hearing your story is really, really interesting. I've interviewed a couple other photographers, very similar. You know, that's, you know, and a passion becomes an obsession, becomes a career, and that's
the best way I've ever heard it said. So that's for sure.
Oh, well, sweet. It's right on my website. That's kind of how this whole Athlete on Fire thing got started.
I love it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So that's kind of how you got started. How old were you when you were first taking those pictures, and your girlfriend's mom kind of hooked you up with the camera?
You know, I think I was like 19 years old, right around then.
Okay.
So, yeah.
When did you get your first paying client?
Oh, man, that was probably about 2 years later. I think the first person I ever sold a photo to was Channel Island Surfboards, and it was like a photo of one of their, I obviously, moving into surfing, I just loved shooting the water, loved shooting stuff. So I was taking photos daily, you know, in the water, out of the water, everything I could. And, one of the photos they loved and they wanted to use for a catalog. And that was like it. I think it was like $75 or something like that. And then soon after, you know, I had these like delusions of grandeur, like everybody does when they're shooting surfing. And I remember getting my first check from the magazine after I was submitting to them for a while, that I was like, wow, like this is going to be so cool. I'm finally going to get paid from the magazine, you know, yada, yada, yada. This is going to be amazing. And, I realized after I got that first check, I was like, wow, the pay really sucks. Like, this is way less than I thought it was going to be. And I was pretty bummed. I think it was like, because, you know, to set the stage for this, basically I swam out. I got dropped off on a jet ski out of this outer reef, this really gnarly outer reef, in Central California, where basically it was just like a total, like, you know, shark infested area, and I was just freaked out, you know, and didn't want didn't really want anything to do with it. But they dropped me off, and I was in the fog, and I basically just was there, like, waiting, you know, waiting for someone to take a wave on a boogie board, sitting by this reef, hearing, like, the eerie sounds of this buoy. And, you know, I was, like, inspired by the words the photo editor told me, like, oh yeah, go out there, push yourself, you know, do this and that, blah, blah, blah. We'll get a shot in the, you know, the mag, the, you know, the photo annual for sure, blah, blah, blah. And so I did that, you know, I pushed myself and way beyond my comfort zone and went out there. And then I just was like, wow. And he finally, this guy took a wave, came to the inside, got absolutely lipped and just smashed in the head. And didn't even, like, it was like the most uneventful thing ever. It was definitely gnarly. I mean, to say that word and hope it makes sense, but it was gnarly by all means. But it was like, it was not anything that I was, like, expecting. I was like, what? That's it? That's all there is to it? You know, like, I was kind of devastated a little bit. So came back, sent him the photos. He loved the photo because it was this really dramatic moment, you know, and I was like, okay, cool. Well, maybe, you know, maybe something will come of this. And I got my check, and it was like $170 for, like, almost a spread. And I was just baffled. It was just like nothing. It was like nothing, you know. And I'm like, wow, how can people make a living doing this? So that was a wake-up call and a realistic moment, you know. And I obviously stuck with it and it made a career out of it. So
the thing I think about, because I'm trying to, you know, I relate this to athletes, and confidence is just such a, it's not a skill, but something that you have to build up in your career as an athlete to go compete at a high level. But there's a certain level of confidence that you have to have before you can really take off in business in a lot of ways. You know, most artists don't just have all of their content sitting there and have somebody come pay them a lot of money. It doesn't typically happen like that.
Completely.
You have to figure out a way to make it work. So what was that point for you when you knew, okay, I'm going to make this sucker work. I know I'm doing things better, or at least in a more unique way than other people. Was there a point for you when your confidence kind of shot up and you're like, okay, all in,
well,
let's do this?
You know, I really cut my teeth for a lot of years, and I had the opportunity to do some internships and shoot freelance and then work with magazines and yada, yada, yada. But it wasn't, you know, when I was early on, right after I finished an internship at Transworld Surf, I was just like still a kid right out of, you know, high school, basically 21 years old, something like that. I had finished an internship and I submitted my images to a grant for a photo editor who had passed away. His name was Larry Flame, and it was basically this foundation called the Follow the Light Foundation that kind of honored him and gave some money to, like, the best up and coming surf photographers. So, like, whatever, I was, you know, not expecting in any format to actually win this thing, but I applied, and I had a really and you had to, you know, pitch it with a concept, and my concept was to make a book that celebrated California and California's, you know, lifestyle and California's surf culture. And so I won the entire thing, and I won, like, it was like nothing. It was like $5,000, you know, but that money, I instead of, you know, one of the things I think that really defined me in that moment was that, like most people, you know, I think would have put that right towards equipment, because that's really realistically what everyone at that age needs. You know, you need equipment, you know, you're using like mediocre kind of crappy stuff. And so I put it all towards a project. I put it all towards a book that I was so, you know, not thinking I would ever actually get a book deal. But I put every single dime of that into going and creating this book. And so I spent 50 days on the road, and we ended up pushing it to Chronicle Books, which is a huge publisher on the West Coast. And they loved it. And they decided, hey, we want to publish this book. And so that was kind of the birth of my career, and it gave me a validation, a validity, you know, that was, you can't get anywhere. You know, there's no value of money that's going to be worth somebody saying, yeah, your work is so good, we want to publish it. And it's one of their best selling surf books, and it's on the market today. And so that has been huge for me. And beyond that, I was able to win the 2013 overall Red Bull Loom winner for the best, like, action sports photo of the year. It's a contest that happens every 3 years. And
sweet. You know, where's that bad boy? I want to link that up.
That's, I mean, if you go to RedBullAloom.com, they've done it 3 times. It happens every 3 years. So I won the overall event in 2013. I won my category and the overall. And then in 2010. And then in 2013, I won I won the spirit category winner. So, I mean, I don't want to list off my host of awards, but I think that those things have really played into this idea of, like, you know, providing validation for people in this career path, because you're right, it's something that doesn't always come with, like we're not celebrated, you know, photographers aren't usually celebrated. It's not really something that happens right. A lot. So I feel like for me, that's huge. It's anything like that is such an honor and so huge that, you know, just to be recognized on a global level for the work that you're doing is such a huge thing.
No, it's so cool. And it's credibility, and it's important in sport. It's important in business, of course. There's, you know, I interview a lot of endurance athletes, and these ultra endurance athletes, you know, careers are short lived because you only have this little window where you're really going to be able to compete at a high level. It's just how it is. And, you know, people get their credibility by winning a few races in a short period of time. And a lot of careers are launched from that model. And it's pretty cool. You know, I think in artistic endeavors such as yourself, you're just going to continue to grow. Once you have that credibility, you can build on top of it for the rest of your life. You can't necessarily do that as an athlete, you know?
Sometimes I also feel like there's an element of your career, you know, like with any career path, it has a lifespan. It grows and it elevates at a certain point. And I think that that's an important thing to realize is that, you know, I'm 28 years old right now. So I know that throughout from now to like 35, that's going to be like the peak of my career. And so for me to see that and to realize it and want to act on that, is important. Like with anyone, you know, like with any athlete or anyone else, like you have a peak and you need to be realistic, you know, and realize that you're never going to live. No one's going to live forever. And we need to act on those moments because those are the ones that really define us, I feel like. So
we were kind of just joking around before we got on air about sleep, because you have kids, I have a couple young dudes, and sleep is kind of not really an option for
us. What's
that? What's
us? That? Sleep? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What's sleep? And I haven't heard that word in a long time.
See, and what's wrong with you? You're happy. I don't sound like I'm totally miserable. So tell me a habit right now that people can kind of relate to that really allows you to get a lot of stuff done and be really, you know, really efficient with your time.
You know what? It's funny because I used to have kind of like a routine where I'd like come in the office and I'd like, you know, dork around on the computer and look at some blogs and do this and that. And, you know, I just, you know, you're and just kind of wasting time, you know, and I find that for me, the biggest part of being able to be like is to really be efficient with my day, with my time is getting up early. Like as counterproductive as that sounds, getting up early, going for a run, doing yoga, and then allowing myself to kind of, you know, relax a little more throughout the rest of the day. And I think that too, there's this, you know, like any athlete, we're always like psyching to just go out and exercise. You know, it's kind of what's on your mind the entire day. You don't want to like let a day go by where you miss that opportunity, right?
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So I think that is, that's important to realize. And thinking about, okay, like if you can get that out of your way for part of the day, then you can take the rest of the day to relax. You know, you can take the rest of the day to mellow out. And I think that for me, it's usually a mixture of just like everything I do is usually before like 9 a.m., you know, and trying to get sleep. That's the hardest thing, trying to get to bed early. Sorry. I mean, for me, the problem with kids is that it's not that you don't get sleep, it's that you don't get long sleep. You're constantly interrupted, right?
Yeah.
So it's that like you feel like you're going crazy slowly because you only get like 2 hours at a time. So that's really what it comes down to.
Sweet. So I'm not losing my mind. This is normal. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. I love the Arctic stuff that you're doing. I want to dive into that a little bit. Let's use the mental toughness as kind of the backdrop for a lot of the stuff that you did up there. Paint a picture for everybody really quick. You know, what is this? What was that video all about? You guys can go check it out once again at brickhardphoto.com. But just tell us about this whole cold weather obsession or cold surf obsession it seems that you have.
I mean, for the, you know, a big part of like obviously becoming successful in any career is kind of defining yourself within the realm of photography. And so for me, like I understood I've always kind of been pretty clearly tuned in to like what type of stuff is going to be unique and cool and in terms of surfing and trying to be kind of ahead of trends, I guess you could say. And so, you know, while everybody else is running to, you know, Hawaii or these warm water places, I just want to go places that are a little more desolate and speak a little more to like the landscape and the locations and stuff like that. And I think that there's an element of that to that has always defined my work. Going to some of these places that really, like, I guess, speak to the essence of that, you know, is what I've always sought. So that's brought me to Iceland and Norway and Russia and Norway and I don't even know where else, Japan and all over the globe, seeking out some of the coldest places that I've been able to find. Because I think that the perfection there is just so much more pure and there's no people. And it's kind of what everyone envisions when they think of exploration, I think.
So when you're planning logistically and physically and mentally for these trips, what does that look like before you know you're going to go freeze your butt off for a week at a time?
Well, some trips take like 3 years to plan. It's funny because I love, the reason I'm stoked to be a part of the show is I feel like a lot of people here really relate closer to mountain culture than probably to surf culture, which is the same for me, actually. I equate the projects that we do a little closer to mountain culture because we're going to these places essentially looking for a first ascent. You know, we're looking to be the first people to surf this wave in the Arctic, you know, so logistics is a huge part of it. Like, we're, like, the last trip I did to Alaska, we got dropped off on a plane, and there's six people living on this island. We had to, like, take quads basically to the beach, like 30 miles or so daily, and then we would kind of suit up and, you know, venture out into these uncharted foreign waters and kind of try to explore and see what was possible, you know. And you have to be careful and you have to be, you know, very much, you know, aware of the surroundings and people are with you and making sure everything's safe and stuff like that. There's a lot that kind of goes into those things, you know, to make it like safe and efficient. And it's just like with anything else, you have calculated risks. So
yeah, absolutely. So kind of, you know, what is next for you as far as your whole journey and seeking out first ascents in the water? Like, what are you working on now?
Such a funny way to put it. I'm actually working on a children's book, right?
Cool.
Now, I've made four books so far, and they've all been kind of based on trips or just general photography or whatever. And so I love long-term projects. I've always been a long-term project kind of photographer, films and books and things like that. And so now I'm stoked to be working on this rad children's book concept. And it's something that I'm doing with this really talented Disney artist as well. And I'm so grateful to have something that I can, you know, give to my kids and tell them that it was, you know, for them and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool, man. So, what do you have a name for it? Can you share that or no?
Yeah, it's going to be called, it's tentatively titled like The Boy Who Spoke to Earth. And it's kind of just like, it's just basically these rad landscape images mixed with, like, you know, landscape images of mine that are being illustrated and kind of this kid's journey of finding happiness in the outdoors.
Oh, sweet. We will be probably the first people to buy it.
Oh, man. No, it'll be cool. I'll send you one. So.
Oh, that's so cool. Awesome, man. So, man, there's just so many things I want to talk about. Okay, so the last thing, let's talk about some stories from the Arctic, like kind of extreme things. You know, was there a time ever when you're up there where you felt like your life was in danger, like where you felt, you know, two more minutes of this and my heart's going to stop? You know, if you want to share a couple of those stories, that'd be pretty cool.
You know, I would say that there's been a couple things that have been kind of closer calls. The one time that really, like, was crazy for me was when I, the times that I've shot in the water, it's been really cold. You have to, you know, there's a learning curve there. So that was a huge element to me to understand, you know, like, okay, you can't just go out and give everything. You know, you have to basically prepare yourself to also have enough time to, like, get in from that. So when the blood is leaving your extremities and your fingers and your toes and you're getting freezing cold and your mind starts kind of getting cluttered, you know, that's the toughest thing, you know. And so for me, there's been a time or two where I've had to get carried in from the water because it feels like I'm walking on like wooden pegs, and I have basically, you know, just nothing to support myself. And so I've had to have the surfers come in and kind of walk me in, because you're walking over like seaweed covered grass on the ground. It's just crazy, you know, over rocks. It's really dangerous. So there's been a couple times there, you know, warming up, I've gotten pretty, you know, bad frostbite on my fingertips. So every time I go there, my fingers just freeze up first. The other time would be being in Iceland. We were driving from overnight all night from the north of the island to the south of the island on the interior during February, which is not a good time to go. And we just basically, long story short, we hit a patch of black ice, spun our van around, and we almost flew off a cliff. But luckily we went to the right side of the road where it was like a nice embankment, but just total black ice everywhere, blowing like 50, 60 knots. And you couldn't even get out of the car because the ice would just make you slide, you know? So we were like crawling to the car, had to call 911, their 411, which is in Iceland. And some guy showed up with like a Toyota pickup and a shotgun in the back and just like hauled us out. It was like the most badass thing I've ever seen. It was really, really crazy. But, you know, we're lucky to, like I said, choosing who I go with on trips is so important. The athletes are more than just, you know, athletes, they're friends, they're people I trust and value with my life. So it's important that when I'm with them, that, you know, I know they have my back.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's a great segue, because I wanted you to give a shout out to some of the athletes that you've been shooting and just give them a quick, push right now. That'd be great.
I would say, you know, the Malloy brothers are all pretty much some of my heroes, the guys I've traveled with all over the world, Alaska and Russia and, you know, Japan, all over the place. And they're people I trust and just value their outdoorsman skills, you know, more than anything, because I know they can survive. And it's with surfing, it's like there's so many different forms. And when I go with guys that can surf anything from 50 foot to 5 foot, it's amazing. Also, the Dan Gadowskis is an amazing human. If you ever see or have a chance to check out our film from Russia, he's kind of the star of that movie and just made the trip so amazing. You know, positive attitudes in harsh conditions are everything. As you know, I'm sure it makes or breaks a trip. So.
Yeah, for sure. No, thanks. Thanks. And I'll link those guys up too and maybe get a chance to talk to them and share their story on a more personal level. That'd be really cool. This is the second segment. We're going to dive into the last one. It's athlete inspired. It's a little bit more quick hitters. And before we do that, I always do like a goofy quiz, but because you travel so much, I have such an intrigue with people who love travel and see the world. It's one of my passions as well. So I'm going to give you three topics and you're going to tell me a really quick, like 30 second story about one of these topics with your experiences. Okay.
okay. Yeah. Shoot.
All right. Number one. A wildlife story. Do you have any crazy wildlife stories anywhere?
Wildlife stories. Oh, man. You know, I would say wildlife for me, the worst one is the microscopic wildlife. I got crazy staph infection in Tahiti one time, and I was doing back-to-back trips, Tahiti to Nicaragua, somewhere else, and I had no idea it was staph. And I ended up coming home and I was basically in bed for 2 months, like staph running, like MRSA actually, which is medically resistant staph infection. And it was just the gnarliest thing I've ever endured. It was like bedridden, you know, leg up, just like red lines running on my back because it was so brutal. And I'll never forget. You know, it's funny because we always think of the big animals, the sharks and all the big things that are out there to get us, but it's the little microscopic ones that you never think about.
Oh man, that's crazy. All right, so how about a good weather? You kind of shared a weather story already, but maybe like an extreme weather story besides that black ice one.
Geez, there's so many. You know, I feel like any time I've traveled, we run into extreme weather. In Norway especially, there's so many times where you're driving your car trying to go from one island to the next, or in Alaska, and just basically you have to pull the car over. You know, I've lost a lot of doors on vehicles on surf trips, usually from us opening them in like 80 to 100 knot winds. And you know, we had this one trip to Norway where we wrecked three vehicles, and it was actually set up through tourism. So they were not very happy, but basically Avis, the last car we had, ended up being the Avis actually gave us their vehicle, their actual like delivery vehicle that had Avis on it. And like we were at the beach, it was an amazing day. We're all excited. The winds are blowing like 100 knots offshore, crazy weather. And we opened the door and the thing just bends all the way backwards. And we were just like, oh my gosh, like third vehicle. Like it was crazy. But I'm definitely, the weather is everything, you know, weather makes or breaks your experience. So that's super important to me.
Oh, that's wild. All right. You're not borrowing the Toyota when you come to Colorado. That just,
no,
you just
no.
set that in stone. All right. And the last one about your travels is the human element. You know, tell us a story about humanity, you know, outside of your own group that you experienced that you can share with us.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. You know, when I first started to travel, the very first place I went to was Oman in Dubai. And I was so young. My parents were just like, oh, you're going to the Middle East. It's going to be crazy. Don't go, blah, blah, blah. You don't know what's out there. And just so much fear, you know, I think mainly because of the fact that they hadn't experienced a lot of those places. And I remember going there and we were in this remote part of Oman, right by the Yemen border. And we're late at night in this town and we're driving around trying to find a place to stay. And, you know, the language barriers were thick. We were with a guy from Dubai who spoke really, you know, the language really well, but we're getting into Yemen and it's a lot different there. And basically, like, we're just trying to find a place to lay our heads down. And, you know, it's like 12 in the morning, 12 at night. And we run into this guy, super sketchy looking guy. And, you know, judging from my, you know, my personal evaluation. And then he ends up being the guy who drives us around for 45 minutes to like 15 different places to find a place to stay, just out of nowhere for no money, just to help. It was like one of the coolest things ever. And it was just like the nicest guy ever. I mean, you would never find anyone like that in the States to do that for you ever. Like, I'm sorry, but I was just baffled. And it was so cool to see that. And that was like one of our first experiences. And it really sedimented like this idea in my mind that, you know, people are amazing and there's a lot of good out there in the world. And I think that I've always sought that out from here on out.
Yeah. You know, me and my wife, one of the things we always talk about is the country as portrayed in the media is kind of like the brand, it's the market, but you really don't, really have no idea what the people are like until you actually get on the ground floor and just start talking to people. And people have similar, people are as generous in some parts of the world as anywhere else. And you just got to go experience it for yourself, which is the coolest thing about traveling anyway. So, all right, we're almost done, man. I got like three or four questions left. They're kind of quick hitters. It's the last segment called Athlete Inspired.
Yeah.
The first one, is legacy important to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's everything. Especially like, I look at that as like a way to, you know, celebrate the people that have come before me, to celebrate them. And within the realms of photography, I really try to pay homage to those folks that have come before me and paved the way, and leaving a legacy behind. If I could sum up my work in one sentence, it'd basically be like, I want to create images that are going to be around a lot longer than I am. You know, I hope that my photographs are appreciated long after I'm gone. You know, that's everything.
So. Awesome. So is there somebody out there right now that's inspiring you that you can share with us?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of folks. That's always too hard for me because I find inspiration from so many different places. And I actually have to just like, I have to like click back to my Instagram, you know, like the people I'm following, because I feel like the people that I am constantly inspired by, I'm finding online. People that I never would have imagined or found or seen or anything like that in the past. But I would say it's hard to nail it down to one person. I think that for me, it's more of like the medium. This medium of social media has been incredible. Like what you used to have to go and find, like think about 10 years ago, you know, you used to have to go and like look through libraries and books or see things in newspapers or magazines, and then it became like Tumblr, and now all of a sudden it's like you can literally by the swipe of your thumb be introduced to like hundreds, millions of different types of photography, and that's so inspiring to me.
Awesome.
You know, I have a couple of photographer friends that I really love. I would say there's a guy, Forrest Woodward. He's from New York and shoots a lot of climbing and stuff. His work is really incredible, so.
Forrest Woodward, cool. I'll link it up. Yeah, if you could just share one. You know, one of the things when I was contacting you guys was, you know, I told you before we got on, I'd never heard of you until I saw the Arctic video, and it was just so inspiring. I just felt like I had to reach out. So maybe for Forrest, this, and for you, this show will expose those guys and you to some new people, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Is there a book that you can recommend that kind of inspires you, that's, you know, a basis for inspiration for you?
Yeah, it would be The Monkey Wrench Gang by by Edward Abbey. That'd be a good one.
Nice.
People to read. I think anyone that cares about the outdoors is probably in some way influenced by Abby's work and the efforts that he's put to conserving wild places. You know, that's been a big part of my life, trying to, you know, cultivating a appreciation for wild places, you know, as I've been able to travel. So
for sure, for sure. So one of the questions I always ask is, you know, we're so connected. You mentioned social media being really important for you, but what about it is important? How can people connect with you through all of your avenues online? Just kind of let us know how people can reach out.
I mean, the best places to kind of follow my work and check me out are basically probably on Instagram would be the most current and most active channel, just at Chris Burkhard, and then our Facebook channel at, you know, Facebook.com/ Chris Burkhard Photography, and then our website. You know, we're always constantly updating and changing things. And I think the big thing for me is, like, I was such a late bloomer to social media. In fact, in some ways, I hate it, but I know it's kind of a necessary evil. And the only way I've been able to justify it is by creating experiences and content that I can actually share with real human beings. So a big part of that for me is doing events and, you know, slideshows and workshops and film screenings and book signings where I can go and meet people. And that's been the most beautiful thing ever, is like just meeting up with folks. And I've met some of my closest friends from this channel. It's been awesome.
Oh, that's great. That's a really cool philosophy on social media, because it'll burn you out in 2 seconds, because if you have a social business or service, you have to be on talking to people. And it's a cool way to meet people, but unless you can connect the dots and actually get to know them, it's sometimes a frivolous pursuit. So thanks for sharing that. We're going to wrap everything up, man. You've been awesome today. Thanks for all the time. We're going to go back to the first question I asked, and I want you to go back to that 15-year-old version of yourself and give him some advice right now.
Oh, man. 15-year-old version of myself. Best thing I could say would be to give your parents a little more slack and go on more vacations.
That's awesome.
That's the only thing I can think of. That's the only thing me and the wife talk about all the time, is go on more vacations, because, you know, when work starts, it never ends. So
awesome, man. Well, Chris, thanks so much for your time, and I had an awesome time learning your story today, and thanks for taking that time out of your day.
Thanks, brother. Talk to you soon.
Awesome. Cheers. And this is for everybody else. I'm Scott Jones, and you guys were inspired by Chris Burkhard.
Thank you for listening to Athlete on Fire. Stay fired up with additional resources and information at athleteonfire.com.